My kids go to parties or weddings or whatever, and people come up to them and go, "You're Callie Cox, right?" And she'll be like, "Yeah." And they'll say, "Oh man, I've listened to your dad's parenting stuff. I know all your stuff, all your stories." It's just like, oh God. Poor kids. I thought about writing a parenting book at one point, and I don't have a lot of issues with writing a book. This is what I love, and I don't like writing. So that's something we can discuss later. But they all said that they wanted to make up like code names if they had a book, because they didn't want their real names. So like Raised in Arizona, you know, we use code names. They wanted to make up fake names like Sally, Mary Ann, and so, you know, and I would, so. Okay, anyway, back to work. Number five, I flipped over some way, sorry. Boom, 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 boom. The ability to deal with yuck. The ability to deal with badness in the world. Remember, can I forgive you? Can I forgive me from the marriage conference? Are you seeing parallels here with the marriage conference? It's the same brain made them both up, A, okay? But B, what we're talking about is character. The ability to do life and have relationships. And we can apply that to parenting. We can apply it to marriage. I want to do, I have a conference on how we grow in the heart, like sanctification. I want to come back and do that one here for y'all at some point, and I'll use a very similar model there. It's just John's model, okay? So, how we make sense of forgiveness, how we deal with sorrow and loss and pain, how do we help our kids do that? God calls this humility, log out of your eye, forgiveness. This is about how do you help your child from becoming a perfectionist? How do you help them learn that enough is good enough, all right? Deal with failure. Deal with shame. Okay? So since the fall, of course, nothing is as it should be. You know, the other line always moves faster, and people talk in movie theaters and death, sin, and taxes. And if you haven't noticed, no one prepared your child for this development. They start encountering the pain and the yuck in life, and they start hollering about it. Okay? I don't like this Sam I Am. Must have gotten off of the wrong planet. This place stinks, you know? There's no dessert before supper, and mom won't buy me a Kylo Ren lightsaber, so I'm knocking over the candy rack at the grocery store, you know? But we all struggle here. We aren't born to make sense of things being fallen. It was one thing that God didn't equip us for, because we're the ones who broke it, right? So you know that awful feeling when things aren't the way you wish they were, the disappointment, the loss, or pain. Or that awful feeling when you have done something wrong, that shame thing. We aren't born knowing how to deal with that. In fact, the basic position that most people assume when we encounter the yuck in life is a position of protest. In other words, we attack others. You know, this is inexcusable. Or we attack ourselves, sort of the hate myself, I'm a bad person thing. Or we run to escapes. You know, eating, shopping, whatever. In fact, a ton of the wacky things that people do in order to, that screws their life up, are things they've come up with to do in order to deal with the pain in their life. Okay? So they come up with pain, they're facing pain, so they come up with more pain to try to deal with the pain. You know, whatever. Stuff keeps me in business. Nobody ever said sin makes you smart, right? So we have to literally be taught the ability to metabolize yuck and pain and find peace with it as opposed to protest. So how do we do that? How do we help our kids develop that? Number one, this is gonna be counterintuitive. Number one is, but don't be afraid of your kids feeling pain and yuck. This is gonna be one of the hardest things I'm gonna ask you to do. Slide. Here's Secret of the Universe number 41. Pain itself does not harm children. Unresolved pain harms children, okay? Pain that's in relationship makes us stronger. Go read Romans 5. Pain produces proven character, and proven character hope. Hope does not disappoint. I think it goes something like that, okay? In other words, what I hear in the office is not, oh, doc, we had pain. Dad was a drunk. What I hear in the office is, hey, doc, we had pain. Dad was a drunk, and no one ever talked about it. There's your hook, okay? In some ways, this generation, my generation of parents too, is, you know, legitimately called the helicopter parents because we work so hard to protect our children from all their suffering. And I don't blame us. I don't know much pain worse than seeing my children hurt. Like I was telling you about Callie and the diabetes. That ripped me in half. I still wince thinking about the pain they went through. But number one is we need to be careful and resist protecting them from life's manageable blows, okay? They don't make the team and we're calling the coach. They forget their science project, we're at Walmart at 9:30 buying poster board and styrofoam planets. You know, we need to be careful about rescuing them from that kind of pain. One reason that is that if we don't help them face real life now and engage some of those losses now and just let those losses sit now, we're gonna talk more about this one, don't worry. They're gonna face it sometime without us. I don't know about you, but the first time my children encounter pain, I want them walking through it with me, all right? So let's work to not rescue them from sorrow. But if they hurt alone, in other words, it's unresolved pain that hurts children, harms children, if they go through it alone, it's going to feel traumatic. Which brings us to point number two. We help them with pain by, number two, being with them in it. Is this starting to sound familiar? We join them, we hear them, we're with them in their disappointments and their losses. We will talk about this one a good bit tomorrow. We don't fix it, we don't blow it off, we're with them. Sweetheart, oh my gosh. Darling. Ugh, that hurts so much. We're gonna walk with you through this. Just like empathy, love and limits, with heals our fallenness, our brokenness, like Callie's anger earlier. I hate you, you're the meanest day in the world. Just like emotional presence and connection heals that, emotional presence and connection is what heals empathy, what heals their pain. Empathy heals their pain. If I am with you in the context of limits, yes, I'm not going to rescue you, but I love you and I'm with you. Does that sound familiar? Walk through the valley of the shadow of death. I'm going to come rescue you with my staff. No, I'll be with you. Okay? So they don't make the baseball team. They come home crying. We go, oh, they're going to go rent a movie and eat pizza. And no. Let's let them struggle. But we come alongside. We love you. I remember this girl broke up with me in junior high. My first real heartbreak. And I remember I was in my room crying, and my mom was sitting next to me on the bed, and my dad was standing right kind of nearby, and I was crying, and they were with me. I'll never forget that. And I remember through my tears, I've never talked to my mom about this, but I remember through my tears hearing her say to my dad, she said, I wish I could just turn that girl across my knee. Yeah, mom. Yeah. All right, so pain and loss and suffering are metabolized through loving presence. That's why with is God's favorite preposition. We'll talk about that some more tomorrow. It's why therapy works, and it's why parenting works, okay? Third way that we teach about the badness and yuck in the world is the bad news and the good news. But at first, it's going to sound like bad news, all right? So bear with me. Unfortunately, the most powerful way that kids learn, like, how big a deal it is that life is yucky is by what they see and experience with how we deal with our own losses and disappointments and theirs, okay? So if we're sort of the uptight white glove type who's always complaining about, like, the teacher this year is no good and that guy next door won't shut up his dog and you have a dirty face going to grandma's, or I'm not able to hear it when you talk to me about my own shortcomings. Unfortunately, that's where they get a really loud sense of how big a deal it is for things to be falling. Okay? Well, I guess it's a big deal. Dad's going off again. All right? They're going to get that vibe, that kind of sense from that. So unfortunately, they need to see us face loss and embarrassment and difficulty and pain, and our poise and our kindness stay intact. Okay, I told you it was bad news, right? But what would that show them? I had a client tell me this story. I love this story. I can't do this story, but I love this story. So he comes home from work one day, and his daughter's like, his wife and his daughter is in the kitchen, and his daughter's wearing one of his t-shirts, his favorite t-shirt, in fact. And she's like a teenager, and she's bopping around with a ponytail in his t-shirt, and he thinks it's kind of cute. And as he walks through the room to go change clothes after work, he goes, "You look cute in my favorite t-shirt in the whole world. You can ask me if you want to borrow it next time." You know, and he goes back and he changes his clothes. And he comes out and there's this sort of somber silence in the kitchen. And he's not really sure what the deal is. He's like, "What's going on?" And his daughter turns around and there's paint all over the shirt. And she had used his shirt to paint in. And he tells me, as a good disciple of mine, he went and took a time out. Because nothing that he would have said at that moment would have been helpful. This is one of my clients. He actually goes, and he goes into the bedroom, and he gets his grounding. And he comes back out, and you know what he says to her? He says to her, "You know what? Love's cheap. Love's cheap. How easy is it? I love you. Love you too. That's what we do. Yeah, love you. Bye. It's easy. It's cheap. And rare it is that we get the opportunity for love to be costly. And a rare gift indeed it is." And he said, "This t-shirt is something I loved. And to lose it is costly. But I love you so much more than this t-shirt. And I am happy to pay the cost of that to love you." Ever wonder where hearts learn grace? There. Get to know God, kid. Okay? Now, I love that story. And I hate that story. Because if you're like me, it kind of makes you depressed. I mean, who can really do that? For real? All right? So the good news. John's theme song, let's say it together. The only thing better than a perfect parent is what? A humble parent. Thank you. So when you mess up and you overreact and you go, "That's my favorite t-shirt. I can't believe you got paint on my t-shirt. It's more important to me than you." You know. Swing back in. Come back and go, "Oh my gosh, I'm such a twerp. I'm such an idiot and a jerk. And I took that out on you. And that was not okay." Call me out on that kind of thing. What's the next one? Yeah. Here's the best secret of the universe. We teach grace by needing grace. In other words, let your screwed upness be part of your relationship. Welcome to the club, kid. In other words, I'm not telling you that you have to handle the yuck in life with grace. I'm announcing to you that you can. There's good news. You can be a screwed up parent, and that's going to be your foot in the door to your child's heart. I used to tell my kids, the only difference between you and me is I was born 20-something years before you, so I know some stuff you don't know. And God put me in authority over you, so you got to do the stuff I say. But other than that, I'm a knucklehead like you, and I make mistakes like you, and I'm still learning like you, and I have gifts like you, okay? And the message here is, again, it's like our Amazo dad who didn't get mad about the t-shirt. Love is bigger than the bad, okay? We don't have to run to protest or anesthesias or anger. Love is where we run. That's God's answer. That's ours too, all right? Two more. Y'all remember this one from the marriage conference? The ability to manage your emotions. In other words, somewhat the hallmark of adulthood, the ability to to have a feeling and not necessarily act on it. Okay, where we start, remember, is children are concrete thinkers. That's why Sesame Street doesn't talk about the concept of threeness. It talks about one, two, three, cookie, okay? So likewise, children are concrete feelers. For children, emotions are real things. If you're mad at me, something bad might happen to me. If I feel something bad, I might be bad. Emotions are things to them. And if you notice, they do what they feel. They don't say, you know, I am so sad that you didn't buy me that Zagnut at the checkout counter. I'm really disappointed. No, they just start, you know, tantrum on the floor. They do something. And if you pick on them on the playground, they're going to do something. They're going to run away, or they're going to punch you in the nose. They're going to do something. And you remember in marriage conference, we said somewhere between then and adulthood, something happens wherein some guy now can cut you off on the freeway, and you think, man, I'd like to run in the back of that guy and teach him a lesson. And you don't. All right? Now, what was it that happened in those intervening years? Well, God made us to where, in order to do relationships well and to serve Him well, we need to develop the ability to have our emotions and look at them and decide what to do. So, fundamental mark of adulthood, whether we're talking marriage or what we want to help our kids develop, is can I feel something and not have to act on it? Thank you. So, your wife says, turn right up here, honey. And we're like, I know how to drive. All right, now what happened just then? Okay, you had a feeling. You know, I'm not stupid. Shame, whatever that feeling is, that's a feeling, all right? But instead of thinking about it, you go, I'm not stupid. All right, so how do we teach this to our kids? I used to say to mine, you can be angry, but you can't hit your sister, all right? Or as God says, you can be angry, but sin not. Same kind of thing. So how do we help me do this? And this is applicable to any out-of-control behavior, anyone who has emotionally driven behavior. As we know, as adults, we still have a lot of emotionally driven behaviors. Principles still apply. Number one, we need to set literal limits on the doing. In other words, limits are going to need to be set, like we're going to talk about tomorrow with discipline, consequences, and choices, on how we act out on our feelings. Something literal, experiential, an event. Something the child experiences. As long as I can act out on my feelings, I will not grow. Okay? I worked at an adolescent unit at a hospital, psych hospital in California when I was in school. And we'd get all these teenagers in, and they were like acting out, right? They're like burning down the school, or they have a, you know, they're beating people up, or, you know, selling drugs, or getting in fights. They're acting out. Their emotional world is coming out in behavior. So you put them in the hospital, and guess what? We can contain their behavior where they can't act out. And what happens is, once you stop the behavior, they started to cry. They got depressed. They started to feel their feelings instead of acting their feelings, right? So first thing you need to do is actually set limits on the act out behavior. So that means step one, your child's throwing a tantrum, they need to go to timeout. Your teenager's cussing you, you need to take their cell phone, okay? Only when we have literal events happen to us do we learn to contain our feelings, okay? And now, step two. If all you ever do is, number one, contain the behavior, all you get is behavioral change. We're wanting heart change too, okay? So number two, something we're going to do is we're going to mentalize their feelings. I made that word up. This means as they grow up, we talk to them about what they feel. We make it mental, not physical. Get it? In other words, as we start to put words on their emotional experience, they start to be able to think about what they're feeling so they don't have to do it. Okay? You know the stereotypical psychologist phrase? It seems like you're very angry. All right? Now, that's not just psychobabble when we say that, because we do say that. What we're saying is we're putting a tag on your feelings. We're naming it. That thing that you're feeling, that's called anger. You don't know that. Most people don't know. Okay? And we teach a kid, hey, that thing that washed over you when you hit your brother, that thing's called anger. And that's something we can work with. We all get angry, but I can't let you hit your brother with it. Okay? And he starts to build this category for I'm having an emotion. Okay? I remember one of mine, I put her in timeout because she had hit her sister. And I went in timeout and I sat down. I love timeout, as you'll find out tomorrow. I said, "You know why you're in timeout?" And she said, "Yeah, because I was angry." I said, no, you're not in timeout because you're angry. I mean, you know, your anger actually can help you. You know, like it helps you with those tacky girls at school. You're in timeout because you were angry and you hit your sister with it. That's what put you in timeout. Now, once you've paid your debt to society and get out, we can talk about your anger, but I want you to be careful what you do with it. It wasn't long after that that I was like sitting in my bed watching TV or something, and she comes walking in the bedroom like this, and she says, "I'm very angry and I want to hit my sister, but I'm not." And I'm like, yay, okay. So she's putting words on it now, all right? That's a fundamental ability for adulthood. That'll lets my spouse do something jerky, and instead of just reacting, I can back up and go, "Whoa, that feels bad. What do I want to do with that?" Golf, not tennis, remember? We're going to be using golf, not tennis tomorrow. All right, finally, what do we need to do adulthood? To be able to know, understand, love God. I mean, all this character development's great, but ultimately, we're talking our ultimate relationship, our ultimate destiny. All that character development doesn't mean much outside of a relationship with Him. So how do we teach them about God? Well, firstly, we've already been talking about that. All right? In other words, it isn't like we're suddenly switching to the religious segment of our program. All right? In other words, when you're engaging your children, think about this. When you're engaging your children about love and about submission and about strength and about wisdom and about forgiveness, think what we've been doing tonight. You are already teaching them the basic software, character software, that we need to have a relationship with God. And then when they learn content about God later on, they can just plug it in. Okay? So we're already ahead of the game here. A huge reason that people struggle in their spiritual life, I see this all the time, it's not because they're just bad people or they like sinning. They hate sinning. Why do I keep doing this, Doc? Huge reason I see people struggle is because they have character deficits in these things that we were talking about. Because, I mean, think about it. How's your obedience going to go if you never learn to submit? You develop that capacity and obedience gets a lot easier. How's your forgiveness go if you never learned about grace? You teach them about grace and forgiveness starts to blossom. Character development is our sanctification, all right? Our character is that tool with which we relate to everyone, including God, all right? That's a whole conference. That's our growth conference that I want to come back and do. Point being, there's not religious aspects and psychological aspects, all right? So, anyway, specifically, though, how do we teach them about God? Two ways, content and experience. Now, content, of course, that's fundamental. Like overt teaching, like devotion times with them, church. My kids went to Christian schools, you know, overt teaching. Though our family, we always had trouble with the family devotion thing. It always ultimately turned into, you will sit down and you will worship as you were told. Do you understand? You know, I don't know if y'all had that same experience. With one of mine, Bonnie was the littlest. I was telling the story of the children coming to Jesus and the disciples and all that. And as I was reading the passage, and Jesus, pulling one to himself, said to them, unless you become like one of these, and I have Bonnie in her little nightgown, you know, next to me on the side of the bed, unless you become like one of these, you will not see the kingdom of heaven. Because the greatest of you will be the least, and the least of you, like one of these, will be the greatest. And Bonnie steps away from me in the middle of the room and goes, that's right, I am the greatest. I'm like, no, I think you're missing my point here. Okay, so I'm not a real champion. I wasn't a great family devotion guy. I was always, they always managed to screw it up. All right, so. I think the ultimate place that we teach content, well, I mean, like when God was asked, where do you teach content? He didn't say family devotions, like Deuteronomy 6 and 11. He says, teach them when? As you walk along the way, as you rise up, as you lay down. In other words, make life a family devotion. Go back one. There you go. In other words, if you really want to teach them about God, bring him up in everyday life. Now, I mean, he's there, right? I had fun with this. I'm going to tell you a couple of stories. I just had fun with this when I was a dad. Get creative. He's everywhere. You see a rainbow, your kids will go, look, Daddy, a rainbow. Don't miss that opportunity. You know, how cool, how crazy is it that God made light to where it's kind of white and clear, but in certain circumstances, it busts out into every color. I mean, what's he thinking? He's amazing. How does he come up with this stuff? Okay. I remember I was cooking with him once. We used to cook a lot. I gave him an egg. You know, if you just use your four fingers, not your thumb, and squeeze an egg like that, you can't break it. If you use your thumb, you can, but just four fingers, you can't break it. Maybe a bodybuilder out there or something could, but an egg is built very interesting in a structural way. And I go, here, just with your fingers, squeeze it, try to break it. And they go, no, Daddy, you'll make a mess. I'm like, show me. Break it. And they'd be like, you know, trying to, and they couldn't break it. So just throw in there, right. God wanted to protect little chickens from goobers like you, so he made this egg. It's perfect. How crazy is this? Okay, we had a game where before he said the blessing, we would taste the food because you're really not sure how thankful you are yet, right? Okay? I mean, I might not be thankful at all. I'm about to offer this beautiful prayer of thanksgiving. This stinks. It's like, you know. Here's my mic dropper. I only did something this good once, but Nintendo 64 came out when my kids were little. And they all wanted one, and we couldn't find one. They weren't anywhere. They sold out. And then I read somewhere that Steven Spielberg couldn't find one for his kids. And I'm like, all right, I'm done. All right. But I saw this thing that they were going to come back in the stores by early January. And I told the kids, I said, told you I would get you a Nintendo 64. They're sold out. They don't have them. But we'll get one in January. So I'm reading the paper in January. Toys R Us has Nintendo 64. So I get the kids. I'm like, let's go, Nintendo 64. Let's go. So we're going to all pile in the car and go get it. So we go to Toys R Us. We buy it. We're walking out, and they're like taking turns carrying the box, you know, and putting it in the car. And when we're driving home, and I had this idea. I thought of this. It just fell in my lap. I had like a beat-up Bible in the back of the truck, and I said, Callie, pull out the Bible, turn to Matthew 7. I said, read that passage. And she says, if you, being sinful fathers, give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give to you? And I said, I'm just a stupid, dumb dad. But I remembered this promise I made to you when you guys had forgotten it. You were outside playing. And I went and I found you, and I kept my promise to you. And how much more will he? See, I told you that was my mic drop. All right. Experience. Now, fortunately and unfortunately, the most powerful place our kids learn about what God is like is from how we treat them. We can learn content about God in lots of places, but where do we get that sense of what God is like? You know, head-heart gap. We'll talk about it in the growth conference. I think we talked about it in the marriage conference, where you know something, but you don't feel it. I know I'm forgiven, but I don't feel forgiven. What's up with that? That's because we learn about forgiveness in our heads from what we learn, you know, reading a book or going to a conference or whatever. We get that gut from what we experience. So unfortunately, we get that sense of what God's like from the relationships that we have. So how we actually treat our kids builds an emotional, relational template for the character of God. Everybody cringe together. Amen. So we learn grace as we experience grace. We learn humility as we experience humility. We learn righteousness as we experience loving truth. When somebody tells the girl, the teenage girl with the paint on her t-shirt, that God has grace and loves her, she's got a template for that. She experienced it from a real person. Now, again, that makes me depressed, all right? So don't let it bum you out. Here's a new version of John's needlepoint principle. Option number one, yeah, make your walk match your talk, okay? Have your spouse and your friends hold you accountable, being a better parent, great. Your own personal growth will help there too. Hey, you're here at the conference, fantastic. But again, we all fail at that, so blessedly there's option number two, let your talk match your walk. That works too. Again, we show God to our kids by not talking like we have it all together, since we don't. All right? I need grace as much as you, kid. Same principle, humble parent. I told you, I used to struggle with my temper with my kids, my anger. And I was trying to get a handle on it. One of the things I did was came up with the discipline plan we're going to talk about in the morning, which helped a lot. But also I talked to them about it. I told them, I said, you know, if you guys screw up, you probably ought to get disciplined. But if I'm a jerk about it, if I'm angry and start yelling and screaming and I'm ugly and scary, that's my immaturity. That's my problem. And that's something I need to deal with. And so I'm giving you like a stun gun. You get to call me out on it. And do it respectfully. But if I'm ugly and my anger starts to be a real player in your discipline, you need to call me out on it. So it wasn't long after that, they had done something, and I was carrying on and showing my ass, and, you know. Callie comes in the room, and she looks at me, and she's like, no, did bad, Daddy, but you're just being mean. Instant anger management therapy. So, as we're fellow sinners with them, as we're fellow screw-ups with them, we show them what a relationship with God looks like. Only thing better than a perfect parent is a humble parent. So now, when they hear about God's grace, they have a reference point for that. That's like how Mom needed our grace. Same kind of thing. All right. That's the Magnificent Seven, boys and girls. Kind of my operationalized picture of what the image of God looks like, but also a model for what kids need in order to make life work. I've worked you hard. This is as hard as it gets. Tomorrow will be easy compared to this. And don't feel like you have to get all of these right now. I want you to have a grid for them, a reference point for them, okay? We've touched on each of them a little bit, but this is the goal. The goal isn't a well-behaved child. The goal is a whole adult. And someone who's in the image of God, and they just happen to be the same thing, okay? Now, as we said, you look at this, different ones of your kids are going to have blind spots in different areas, okay? There's one who's going to be your sweet, soft, loving child who loves to cuddle. You can, like, check mark the love box off of their to-do list. You got that one done. They're also going to be the one who's getting picked on by other kids. You might need to lean more into the strength department with them. So here's a grid for you. Now, your other child who's little, you know, Osama upstairs ethnic cleansing his siblings, he doesn't need any more strength, okay? We need to talk about limits and choices with him, all right? So this is going to help you make decisions there. But whatever you do, remember, do not use this to put more pressure on yourself as a parent. Hey, great, he showed us seven ways in which we're screwing up our kids, okay? That's not it, all right? Parenting is a relationship, not a task. The good enough piece. I always tell parents that parenting is like being in a rowboat that has five holes in the bottom. And you've got two knees and two hands. And so there's always one hole that, you know, you're going to miss. Or as a friend of mine told me once, you know, parenting is kind of like living in a frat house. Nobody sleeps much. Everything's broken. And there's a lot of throwing up. One last one from my children. One time I'd screwed up and I was talking to them about it in this repentant way, and I said, I kind of got carried away. I said, you're right, I screwed that up. I shouldn't have handled that way. I said, you gotta pardon me though. I mean, I've never been a dad before. I'm sort of making this up as I go, you know? So I'm gonna make a lot of mistakes. And they're like dead serious, and one of them goes, was there like a book you can read? Or, All right, let's do some questions. Yes, sir.
On the part about being strong and identity, there at the bottom of it says children get their view of themselves in the world through the eyes of their parents. What are you doing with that? I'm curious about that.
Oh, okay. We'll talk about it more tomorrow, but it's a metaphor in the sense of you come in and you say, everybody got invited to the spend the night party but me. And I'm your mom, and I'm like, oh, well, baby, we're just gonna like pack you up, and we're gonna go to a movie tonight, and we're gonna get pizza, and we're gonna show those kids what fun is. All right, now what are my eyes saying to you? Oh, you're just a little pitiful person who mama has to come rescue, and okay. Now let's switch it. Ugh, I remember that feeling. That's the worst feeling in the world. I'm so sorry, man. Like all them off having fun and Instagramming and stuff. And I love you. Let's do something tonight. We're going to make sense of this. All right. Now, my eyes are saying that you're strong. All right. It's a metaphor for saying children are going to get a vibe from you about how strong they are. And they're looking and kind of going, is the world a safe place? Am I a strong person? And the way a parent sort of vibes and treats them sends this message.
I think you probably spoke to this a little earlier, but you know, going through this, like, I feel very lacking, you know, like, man, going through the list, and yeah, I kind of got that one, but man, this one. No.
You mean you as a person or in your parenting? You're saying, have I developed these abilities?
Yeah.
Good, thank you. Beautiful. Right. Well, you know, if you ask that question, you are close to the kingdom. In other words, your awareness, it's kind of like, you know, what I tell parents of adolescents is the essential quality you need to be the parent of an adolescent is the ability to learn to have comfort with ambiguity and uncertainty and anxiety and not being sure. Because once you hit adolescence, it all gets plastic, you know, and the absolutes start to have to be flexed. And it's the parents of teenagers who go, no, this is absolutely the way we're going to do it, and that's final. They're so sure. They're the ones who teenagers, you know, will, you know, build a meth lab in the basement, okay? So if you look at a task you have and your resulting reaction is humility, then you're close to the kingdom. I think that's a Jesus thing, okay? So what do you do with that? Well, two things. Number one is... I think the body of Christ is our resource for growth there. Like we talked, were you at the marriage thing?
Yes.
We talked about how we grow within the body of Christ. We'll talk about it some more next time when we do the growth conference. I'm making a lot of promises for you here, but one day, it'll be some year we'll do it. get serious about the growing piece. With your small group, with your close guys, say, you know, the whole dealing with badness. You know, things go wrong for me and I just, you know, pop a cork. Help me out, guys. So, yeah, grow there. And number two, use your lack of growth there as the humility piece of the parenting. Okay? So when you screw it up, let that be part of your relationship with your kids. So the gospel's message is always, I just did them in reverse order. The gospel's message is always, there's grace and safety and community and welcomeness for the fact that you aren't complete. None of us here are. None of us ever will be. The only doctor who can help you get complete is not Dr. Cox, it's Dr. Kevorkian. You know, he can send you to a place where in the twinkling of an eye, you will be made completely like Christ. But for the rest of us, we're screwed up. So the gospel is you start with grace and now try real hard and work out your salvation with fear and trembling and begin growing there. So those two pieces. But the humility piece is essential. That piece of, wow, I'm not complete there too. How do I raise my kids? That's what a good dad would say. Bad dads say, I can't believe you would do that. Such a disappointment. All right? I kind of want to go, what, did he not put his kid on his resume? How are you disappointed? You know, you haven't finished these things yet. How do you expect your kid to? Okay? So you're responding in a more godly way, I think. Do you want more? Is that helpful?
No, it helps. I think the other part of that is, so my kids are 3 and 6, and so they're not quite to the age, you know, adolescence where I can walk through stuff and have more complex, sophisticated conversations with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, not like what's too much information, but what's an appropriate way to be vulnerable with a 3-year-old or a 6-year-old.
Well, you can start it with a 6-year-old. 3-year-old doesn't have the categories yet. What kind of things does your 6-year-old talk about? What does he complain about?
That's our daughter.
She, what does she complain about? Is she highly emotional? Is she reactive? Is she keep to herself, self-sufficient? Okay, so let's say you get emotionally reactive around her. At 6, a girl especially, you can say, you know what, I let my emotion get the best of me, and I was angry, and I started acting angry, and I let it get all over me and take over the room and all of my feelings. I think you know something about that. So I share that quality with you. You and I both can kind of get emotionally reactive. Sometimes you feel stuff, and it goes all over the room, and I did too. So I want to grow there. And you're going to need to grow there too, so we can do that together. Huh?
That means I have to be a big boy.
Well, I guess. Or acknowledge it when you're a little boy. Yeah. Because I just turn my own little boyness into a way to talk to her about her. You know? 3-year-old, you just got to suck it up until they get some frontal lobe, you know? Basically, how do you show love to a toddler? You start by not locking them in their room and drinking Chardonnay out of a sippy cup at 10 a.m. That's kind of my number one principle.
Okay, question.
Where are you? Okay.
So, when you were talking about ability to be strong in fear, it was making me think a lot about my 5.5-year-old, who is real sweet, but I think... Well, anyway, his main thing is, like, I can't sleep alone, I'm scared. And so I have been constantly just saying for, I don't know, 2 years, you have nothing to be afraid of. Like, we'll get the light on, that whole thing. So I get the trying to say more like, you can do this, you're strong, that kind of thing. But then also, how do you set boundaries so that he's not waking you up in the night or leaving his room? You know, how do you empower him, but then have consequences that are, I don't know.
That's a good question, and it is one of my weak points. We had the most trouble with kids about the sleep issue. So I'm going to tell you, I'm not going to blow any smoke at you that I can answer this question very well. I didn't answer it very well as a parent. So you are saying you have nothing to be afraid of. What's he continuing to say? I can't sleep, I'm afraid. What is he saying?
He'll have a nightmare. Too dark, he has to have the whole light on.
How does he deal with vulnerability in the waking hours? How does he deal with fear, challenges?
Pretty good.
During the day?
I think pretty good.
It's like he gets more aggressive at night?
Oh yeah, and he specifically says the worst time of his life is at night when everyone goes to sleep and he has to be alone.
Okay, it sounds like y'all are doing a good job of setting the limit piece. I mean, you're not letting him come get in the bed with you and just, you know, you're pushing him to be strong. How about this? Um, The same sort of principle we had for managing my emotional world, that I'm going to set a limit, but I'm also going to mentalize. In other words, with a child that age, I'm wondering if it would be helpful to have a little bit more emotional dialogue about what he's feeling. In other words, remember, kids are concrete, and what they feel, I feel like something bad's going to happen to me, so something bad really is going to happen to me. It might be interesting to talk with him and go, let's talk about what it's like for you when you're in the bed. Do you get scared? Tell me what you're scared of. What would it be like? What would the nightmare be like? Ooh, that is scary. Hold my hand. Be scared with me for a second. I'll be scared with you. Let's look at that. Yeah. So your mind starts to, and I want to talk to him about his inner world and see if you can get a little traction there, so you're not just setting a limit on the behavior, you're also addressing the emotional piece. Try that. Have you tried, you said something about keep him from waking you up in the middle of the night. What's going on?
Now he just had his tonsils out, so he's actually sleeping in bed with me for the first time ever, like, in his life. Okay. So I'm real worried about, and he keeps asking every night, like, so are we done with this yet? He's still waking up in pain every 4 hours, and then we're only day 8. So no, I don't think we are done with it yet, but then I'm real nervous about, because he's...
All right, well, before the tonsils, was he coming in at 3 a.m. and waking you up?
He did,
was
that... probably a year and a half ago.
Okay, that's not a regular thing.
Worse than that, he'll just come in our room and stand there.
Like Paranormal Activity?
Yes,
like
just death.
Staying there by the bed? That sounds like something I would do. Have you ever tried giving him consequences for doing that? If you wake up in the middle of the night and you come and bug us, then there'll be no treat after school, something like that. Have you ever tried a consequence with him?
We just say, please stop doing that.
What?
We just say, please stop doing that. You really freak us out.
Yeah, okay. I might be interested to see if, we'll talk tomorrow some, a limit, I said with managing emotional reactivity, a literal limit in reality. That doesn't just mean a command. That's also going to mean an if-then. And that is, a limit says, if you do this, then it will cost you that. And we'll talk tomorrow about how, unless you have an if-then, a lot of times we're not going to do it. I mean, you wouldn't do it as an adult. So I would think about that too. So those are just some principles to try on. All right. And then you're next. Okay, good. Yeah. Hey.
I have an 8-year-old and 2 10-year-olds, and I'm thinking more about the 10-year-olds, if that gives you kind of a gauge with age. But I think one of the things that other mom friends and I talk about a lot at this age are, it is extremely hard to come up with consequences. And I feel like we address the heart, we have these conversations, but then there are limitations that they're blowing through, and it's hard to know how to address this when timeout isn't necessarily the appropriate consequence for that. For example, I feel like we're having less of the if-thens and more of the, okay, you've just punched your brother, or you've just come in the kitchen and told me how awful my food is, and it's escalating to, I don't like you, or you're the worst mom, like just this verbal vomit that's coming out of their mouths. And it's hard to know how to address that when we can talk about it, but I feel like there needs to be a consequence for it. But it's not as easy as taking their dinner plate away or...
Right, yeah, out. Right.
It's complicated. I don't know.
Is there a dad in the picture?
Yep.
Are y'all doing okay? Were you at the marriage conference last year? Yeah. That's good. So what's dad's response to the kids hammering you?
Well, if he's there, they're not going to do it. I mean, uh-huh.
Okay.
Situation where I had one of my kids at Costco and we saw one of their friends and he thought I embarrassed him and got really mad at me and said something really ugly to me in that moment. And I apologized for embarrassing him and talking through it. But then later I was like, buddy, you can't ever say that to me. What you said to me was so hurtful. And so we talked through it, but I felt like he needed a consequence.
Right. So going back to what you said earlier, just out of curiosity, and since time out is one of my faves, why can't you say, I'll tell you what I want you to do. I want you to spend the next season in the laundry room because you did that to me. I mean, I definitely don't want to embarrass you, but I care about your heart and how you feel. But if you act that way, you can be angry, but you can't hurt your mama. Okay? So you need to give me some time in there. I'll let you know when you can come out. What would happen?
We do timeouts. I think for me, I feel like it's not enough. Like it doesn't feel like the weight to it. Like he doesn't
care.
Depends on the child. This one child I'm thinking of, I feel like he doesn't really care.
He likes being by himself. He's winning in that situation.
Yeah.
Okay. So what does he like?
He likes his Legos. He likes his
electronics. I love electronic discipline. And it sounds evil, too. Administer the electronic discipline. Okay. Where your heart is, there where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Okay. So I think you're definitely on track. There needs to be a consequence. There needs to be an event. If they're treating you like that and they have the capacity, notice, they have the capacity to not do it when dad's around. So they're able to contain that. They're just not. So there needs to be some serious buggy whip in there. Okay. So, by the way, regarding whipping, I haven't talked about spanking any, and you'll notice I rarely do. Not because I have anything against spanking, but I have something against inefficient discipline. Okay, as we'll talk about tomorrow, sometimes you need to pop a leg or something when they're little. But as we'll talk about tomorrow, I want a discipline to be about them versus reality, not something I'm administering to them, even if I'm not angry. And some people misinterpret scripture to mean, you know, the rod with your child literally has to mean a rod. Well, that's not what it means in Revelation. It's a reference to authority and administration of authority. And spanking is handy on the road. It's like a camping stove, okay? Sometimes you need it, all right? But that's not what I want to cook on at home, all right? The little Coleman, you know? But, and never past 10. But you're on the right track that there needs to be a consequence. And the only piece of your question I still don't get is why you were saying there weren't any, because it sounded like we were coming up with some.
Taking away electronics or taking away some toys.
They're ineffective in that they come out of timeout or get their electronics back and they're still sassy to you?
Yes, somewhat. But more, I think part of it is kind of my issue where I want change to be fast.
Yeah, there's no training of like putting the, every time I do this, there's a consequence, therefore I'm going to stop doing this.
Okay.
The dots don't connect.
Good. I want to make that like a foregone conclusion, right? Yeah. Also, I see a place for you to plug in of, you know, guys, I've gotten tale from your mom that there have been a couple of instances of this kind of stuff and that she's put you in timeout or taken away your electronics, and I'm all behind that. I need you to know that this is my favorite deputy, but I'm the sheriff. And if you're going to push her that far, ultimately, I'm going to back her off the scene and you're going to deal with me. And it ain't going to be fun. Because if you hurt her, I'm going to have to really work hard to teach you the cost of that. And I want them to feel the weight of your authority backing hers up, too. I want to pull those together a little bit more, too. All right? They need to kind of get alpha'd in that sense. They're, maybe it's because they're twins, but they have a little too much, whatever that thing is. Right. They think they can get away with too much. Let's not go all the way till 9. I'm getting tired and my voice is getting tired and so is my back. So let's stop in 5 or 10 minutes, all right? We'll come back. When are we coming in the morning? We're going to start at 9. Good. Yes, sir. Yeah.
My question is, you'd made a statement, and it was a statement I heard a lot growing up, was teaching our children that we are under authority too. And my question is how you embody that, because I grew up in a very authoritarian household, very much the because I said so. And I could see this flip in my father. And I say I only reference my father because I see much of him in myself when I'm parenting. And I'd see this flip in my father of very calm and rational to the world. You know, you're saying how we experience that through our parents. But then there's this flip, and you suffer the wrath of that. And because he said so, you violated because he said so more than anything else. But we heard that same thing growing up of, you are under my authority because God gave you to me, but I'm under God's authority. But that doesn't, there's no practical application to that. And what does that look like in a non-overly authoritarian setting?
Beautiful question. I'm trying to not cough into the PA system. Let me try this, and you tell me if we're going the right direction. It feels to me like if we divide parenting, relationship, whatever, into love and limits, into gentleness and authority, into nurture and challenge, peace and righteousness, it sounds like that your dad's style was sort of harsh, controlling, authoritarian limits, but and with a voice acknowledgement that he's under authority too. But I don't feel the love. I don't feel the tenderness. So my first answer to your question, and you're going to tell me whether it's sufficient or not, is the piece that's missing is the empathy piece, the gentleness piece, what I told my kids, only difference between me and you is that God put me in authority over you and that I'm older than you. Otherwise, I'm a knucklehead just like you. We're peers. Mm-hmm. We're both at the foot of the cross. And it sounds like that your dad was never able to step down to that level and say, I'm not just the authority, I'm Bob. And I'm your dad, and I screw up too, and we all screw up. And that acknowledgement, empathy, human to human piece. If they only live out of their role as authority, then the human to human piece never gets touched. I'm thinking that's the missing piece. Does that fit?
The missing piece, and that's
right.
Where I find myself when I get lazy or I'm not really being deliberate is coming down to the level.
I bet you do. Sure.
Discipline, because you sat off of your mother. Or you did this, or you hit your brother. It's very much my reaction, like you said, you know, I'm sympathizing and listening very well, because my reaction is typically in anger. I can get very angry because that's the response I know also as well.
Right, yeah. I bet that's what comes out. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. But I think that's addressing your question. You know, it's sort of like what I'm saying to my kids when I say that only difference between me and you piece is I'm making a distinction for them between my role as parent and my identity ontologically as a human, fallen, sinful human person, just like them. We're exactly the same. I just have a different role and some more experience. And so the issue of I am a human like you, and let's live very fundamentally as humans. And if you as a human are going to be a jerk, then the sheriff and the deputy are going to take you down. But we're going to at least try to have a human-to-human relationship here. That mutuality, that oneness, is a huge family grounding love piece for kids. And it's stepping out of that role. It's also where the humility piece, humble parent piece, is nice. Because if you're a humble parent, you're like, hey, kid, I'm ignorant about stuff just like you are. You know, we're the same. That's a very equalizing, loving place to be. But if you only do that, let's flip it around. If you only do that, you have a big hippie family where they call you, you know, daddy-o and hotcakes, and you have a big hot tub party, you know, and everybody's, you know, you can't do that either because nobody's running that love fest, okay? Somebody, you got to have the authority piece too. So I don't want to go to one extreme to the other, okay? Oh, come on, let's do one more. Ah, I'm going to stay over here, sorry. Yeah.
You were talking about kind of realizing your own sin and addressing, you know, you said you dealt with anger. And what does it look like when maybe that gets brought to your attention and you start seeing it manifest itself in your child? What does that look like for you as a parent, undoing that or kind of circling back around on that and, you know, not continuing down that path, but also saying, I messed up here, you know, how do we move forward and break that cycle? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Just for sake of discussion, are you thinking of a particular age of child?
7.5.
Okay. Well, obviously it ain't too late. You know, let me attach to that question too the piece of, I'm sure y'all experienced this. One of my children was a lot like me, and she's the one I had the most trouble with, and still is the one I had the most trouble with. And it's like now my wife actually helps me a good bit on this. Of like, no, she's kind of reacting in the same way that you would. I'm like, yeah, you're right. And you see images of yourself in the child, and it's hard to deal with. So would you be willing to talk about what it is you're seeing, what kind of dynamic? You don't have to, but.
Yeah, no. Okay. I guess I tend to, like you said, a bit of reactivity, like when something, when I get angry, it's to sort of just verbalize that kind of in a harsh way and not a very sympathetic or empathetic type way.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear kind of that same sort of tone or posture in my child sometimes, and then I'm angered by that, you know, and yet it's mirroring what they've seen.
Yeah. I don't know why I want to say this, but there's a sense in which I want to say to you, yeah, maybe, but. Okay? Maybe she's taken on some of your stuff, maybe she hadn't. You're awfully quick to own a lot of that. And I want to be careful about you owning too much, because then she won't own any, and it'll be, I'm this way because mama made me this way. Okay? And I kind of want to hold her accountable for doing that. He accountable for doing that. I want to hold him accountable and you not take on too much accountability. I feel you gravity absorbing accountability here pretty freely. And just be a little careful in that you don't throw yourself down the rabbit hole there too quickly. Maybe you can be reactive. Most 7.5-year-olds are reactive. They kind of come out that way, all right? So let's change the question. You're off the hook. I don't think you've done this to him. To the degree that you have, we can work on it. So what do you need to do to help address reactivity? What kind of reactivity do you see in him? Same kind of thing? He's
kind of almost overdoing the, well, I'm going to do that. No. You know, just kind of like, oh yeah, I'll show you.
Saying this to y'all? Saying this to y'all? Okay, so we're going to talk about this tomorrow, but what you're saying is, in a sense, he creates a power struggle.
Yes.
Okay. All right, let's call that a power struggle rather than being emotionally reactive. Because a power struggle is a very specific, deliberate kind of emotionally reactive. And it is a challenge of your authority. I'm going to win, you're going to lose, or which one of us is going to win or lose. All right? And the moment you sort of bite at that, he says, well, you know, I'll show you, I'm not going to do so. And the moment we go, oh yeah, well, we'll show you back, you lose. Okay? If you play a power struggle, you will lose it. We'll talk about that tomorrow. So what we've got to do with him is figure out a way to make this a not you versus him conflict. And that might require managing some of your own emotional reactivity. Okay, because a power struggle is a direct challenge in your face, throw down the gauntlet, you and me at high noon, guns in the street, all right? And it's hard to hear that and kind of go, well, I'll tell you what, I'm interested to see how that's going to go for you, and you may win. And if winning is what you want, that's what you can have. If you do win, you're not going to go to the spend the night party Friday night. That's kind of up to you, though. So you can decide. All right, so we're going to talk tomorrow about how to kind of get you out of that conflict, because unless you do, whether you, quote, win or lose a power struggle, you'll lose it. All right? Let's talk more about that one tomorrow. All right. Thank y'all. Like I said, Friday night for marriage conference and parenting conference are the hardest ones. So good for y'all. It's a lot of content, a lot of paradigm shift, and a lot of information and a lot of work. So thank you for hanging with me. We'll get more practical and more detail tomorrow about discipline like this and about teaching children about love and connection and relationship to them. Shall I close us in prayer? All right. Father, and I notice here I call you Father. We are your children. I'm moved tonight as we talked about these things to be reminded of how much this engagement with our children mirrors you, reflects our need for you, reflects our own brokenness in our own hearts and how much we need you, how much we need that you as our good parent. And how we end up like as these priests who minister you to our children, usually poorly. That's humbling, but it's also moving because I think these people in this room are like me. They want to love their children in a way that reflects you to them. I think we want that. And we're disappointed. We're upset at ourselves a lot of times that we can't. I ask you to be at work in our hearts, the people in this room. Spirit, that you would enter us more deeply, that you would form our hearts more to be like yours, that our children would experience you in us. And as a counterpoint to that, when we fail at that, what they would experience is our need for you in us. Either way, that we would bring them to their maker and their father and their friend. We pray this all in Christ's name. Amen.